Welcome back to another scintillating episode of the Brother Trucker Book Club podcast, number 16, The Great American Novelist. I'm your host, Graham Bradley, the original Brother Trucker. That's not true. I'm totally not the first person to ever use that nickname. I just ate a snack with some peanut butter and some chocolate. I'm going to try not to smack my lips too much as I clear the salivations out of my mouth, whatever the heck is the right word for that. It's a late night. It's been a long week. It's my last day of work for a couple of weeks. So, yeah, I figured I would knock out this episode. It's Monday night. I'll get it live Thursday. I'm just not sure if I'm going to have time to get to it in the next couple of days. So, with a subject like The Great American Novelist, I expect that there will be some pushback and some differing opinions because in the short history of our nation, we've had plenty of great novelists. Washington Irving was one of them come to mind. He's actually not the one that I am nominating tonight, but I'm sure a lot of you will have your own opinions on this. Just know that The Great American Novel is not To Kill a Mockingbird, it is not The Great Gatsby, and it sure as hell is not anything written by Nathaniel Hawthorne, despite the fact that all of those books are still the ones that kids are forced to read in public school every frigging year, and then we wonder why they graduate school and they don't want to read anything because they assume that all books suck. Nope, just the ones that you were forced to read. You get to read cooler stuff in college. I guess it depends on the college you go to. The college I went to, back before I was aiming to be Brother Trucker, and this was back when I was going to be like Brother something in the medical field, but I ultimately bailed out of college because the male nurse book club was never going to take off. But I went to college and I was taking some general classes, and during one of the 100 level English classes, I think it was kind of themed on creative writing, I was assigned the book Education of a Wandering Man by Louis L'Amour. Now, L'Amour was a guy that I had heard of. There was a family road trip we took once when I was 13, and we stopped at a gas station somewhere along the way in Utah, and somebody in the van bought a book on tape. You kids listening can ask your parents what the heck that is at the gas station, thinking that it would get us through the next several hours of the journey, and instead the whole thing was about an hour long. It was a short story about a bunch of guys in the Wild West prospecting era, late 1800s. They were in a mine, and it caved in, and they were running out of oxygen, and they had dull pickaxes, and they had to dig themselves out of it, and I really didn't care for it because there weren't any mechs or dragons or car chases or anything like that, but that kind of colored my opinion of Louis L'Amour at the time. So I wasn't extremely excited when I was assigned this book, which was his autobiography, but I started digging into it, and it didn't take long for me to get just thrilled with it. September 2007, I took a flight out to Rochester, New York to visit a friend who was in medical school. She was actually like on deck to be a doctor, like way more ambitious than anything I was going to do. So I had to take a red-eye flight out to New York, and I took the book with me, and it's what kept me awake on the plane for, you know, whatever length of time I actually managed to pull that off. But just a fascinating story. So Louis L'Amour was born in the late 1800s, and he dropped out of school, out of public school, when he was 15, because in his own words, it was interfering with his education. He was a guy that learned by doing and definitely wanted to learn at a faster pace and across a different subject matter than the curriculum allowed. And so he just went out on the road. He said goodbye to his parents and started taking odd jobs here and there, learning different skills. This was back, I think it was back before there was a federal income tax. The government was a lot smaller and a lot less intrusive into the lives of its citizens. So you could pull that off. You were able to just go live anywhere and do any job and, you know, take what you were given and make a living that way. Those were the original hobos, such as it were. And these were guys that were used to living on the road, to not having, you know, a house or whatever, and just taking whatever work they could find. And so we think of hobos now as homeless guys, as vagrants and vagabonds that don't do any work. But back then, you know, as L'Amour says, they were kind of a critical part of the economy because whatever work popped up on your farm or in your factory or in your town, you could kind of count on some passers through taking up the work and learning and earning a wage and then going about on their way. He says when the Depression hit, it was the hobos that felt it the least because they were used to living a slim and Spartan life. And for Lemoore personally, most of his money went to buying dime novels and old textbooks and stuff, and he would just read whatever he could get his hands on as long as it was interesting. And he tended to read more of what was nonfiction. When he became a sailor and started traveling across the Pacific and landing in different ports, you know, he would buy guys drinks and, hey, tell me where you were, you know, if they were war veterans or what have you. And he was obsessed with learning the details of the world that we were in, keeping both feet in the on the ground. He's known mostly for writing westerns. But in his own words, he preferred to write frontier stories. He didn't just write westerns, but it was westerns that made him famous in America. And while he did stick to what are called non-speculative elements, like not fantasy, not sci-fi, he did write a couple that flirted with that. One of them was The Haunted Mesa, which I started to read, and it was a little bit thick and a little bit slow. I don't think I ever finished that one. But Education of a Wandering Man was just, it was fascinating to get a glimpse into what that life was like in America 100 years ago. I just try to imagine somebody in our day and age. I try to put myself in his shoes, saying, I'm going to drop out of high school at 15 and go become one of the most successful novelists ever. I mean, it's an absolute pipe dream now, or at least the odds are much higher against you than they were in Lemoore's day. But what made him such a success at it was his attitude and his approach. I underlined a whole ton of passages in the kind of waterlogged, beat up, cheap Amazon copy that I got, and I keep that copy on my desk, and I'm just pulling it down right now to look at one of the dog-eared sections. I marked a whole ton of parts of this. He took up boxing. He was a soldier briefly during World War II. He opines on politics and the responsibility of citizens in a republic and how to make democracy work. Just it, altogether, the book is under 250 pages, but there is so much knowledge and wisdom and experience packed into it. Probably my biggest takeaway are the segments that he wrote about writing and, you know, his approach to his writing process and about never assuming that he was there. You know, being a writer is a process of continual improvement. He goes, one is never good enough, one never knows enough. And having that sort of, you know, that humility, that understanding of the limits of one's own knowledge, no matter how much you learn, there is still more to learn. I mean, that goes for everything. And that is why he wandered, and that is how he got that education. So if you can pick up a copy of that, Education of a Wandering Man, I highly recommend it. I would be very hard-pressed to look at the list of 1,300-plus books that I've read in my life and pick, you know, 10 favorite, 10 greatest. Obviously, I would have to exclude books of scripture just because those would automatically make the list, and I kind of read those in a different way, in a different mindset than I read other books. But if I were to try to make a list of the 10 best books that I have read in my life, Education of a Wandering Man has an ironclad spot on that list. And in keeping with the theme of Louis L'Amour, I finished reading that book for that 100 level English class. It might have been a 115 class, maybe a 120, I don't know. I shortly dropped out of college after that, but that was the only class that I did really, really well in and that I enjoyed. And when it came time to do exams, and, you know, we had to write a number of essays about the materials that we had covered, that was the only exam that I aced, because I felt like I really connected with L'Amour, and I was able to write spontaneously and just off the cuff about, you know, whatever it was that the exam question was. It resonated so well with me. That same spring of 2008, when I took that final, I was living in Provo. I was living with a couple of friends, and one of my roommates was also a reader, my buddy Shane, and he recommended that I pick up another book by L'Amour called Last of the Breed. And if I understand right, this was the final novel that L'Amour published before he passed away in the late 1980s. The premise is that there's a man named Joe Mack. Mack is short for something, but I can't remember the full length of his name. It was something weird, maybe Slavic, but he went by Joe Mack for short, and he was half Sioux, half, you know, some kind of Native American. He'd grown up in the backcountry, grown up in the Dakotas, knew how to live off the land, how to hunt, how to track, how to conceal himself, all that stuff. He was a track star in high school, and then he went and joined the Air Force. and he was stationed in Alaska where he was a pilot for experimental aircraft. And the story opens with him forced to land an experimental plane in Russia after it had, he'd experienced trouble and he didn't want to bail out, but he had to force land the plane. He would later learn that it had been sabotaged by a KGB plant at the Air Force base where he was in Alaska. He was forced to land in Russia. He was captured by the KGB. He was taken to a gulag, and the KGB kind of had some bad intel mixed with some hubris, and they thought, okay, we're going to capture this guy. We know he's got a background that he's part Indian. We're going to say, hey, you're working for Whitey, and if you want to stick it to Whitey, you can tell us all of their secrets, their military stuff that you know, help us out, help us to build a better Air Force, and you can get revenge for all of your people that have ever been put on reservations and stuff. And Joe Mack basically looks at them and flips them the bird. He goes, yeah, screw you guys. I'm over that. That's not what I'm about. And also, I'm going to escape this place. And they're like, yeah, no, you're not. Nobody ever escapes this place. And he's like, yeah, you haven't met me before. He ends up stealing some pipe that they've got lying on the ground. And once again, he was a track star. He pole vaults over the fence and starts running across the Siberian wilderness. His goal is to run east. And it is, I mean, this gulag is way, way west of the Bering Strait. So he's got his work cut out for him. The book is about him crossing Siberia on foot, and it takes him a long time, and he's trying to get back to Alaska to report that he'd been captured, but he got away and everything. And it's just, oh man, this is L'Amour at his best, writing things that he either learned firsthand or learned from people who had learned it firsthand, and in terms of how to hide his tracks, how to steal supplies along the way. The KGB go and find a Yakut man, and the Yakuts are like the natives of Russia, so they're counterparts to the American Indians, and they would have the same skill set and even have the home turf advantage there in Siberia. They grab this guy and they say, hey, go track down this Joe Mack guy. We can't have him escaping and getting back to America. And so it's these two equally skilled, equally matched men trying to play mind games with each other. And you think, oh, it's a massive wilderness. It's easy to get lost. And it's like, no. These guys can find needles in haystacks, and they are trying to hide from each other the whole way. One of my favorite lines from that book was during his journey, Joe makes some friends, and he's able to confide, who he really is and what he's trying to do. And there's a woman he meets after he mentions that he's trying to get to the Bering Strait, build a canoe, cross it, and go to America. She goes, man, that whole thing, that doesn't sound like it's going to be very easy. And he looks at her and he says, I did not say it would be easy. I said I would do it. And I remember underlining that part in the novel. And I never do that with novels. I'll do that with cheap nonfiction that I'm studying. But just, man, like that attitude, something that I wish I had more of. It was just, it was amazing. So yeah, definitely dig into Louis L'Amour. He wasn't just this guy who wrote dusty old westerns that were on your grandpa's bookshelf that he read when he wasn't watching black and white John Wayne movies. Very much worth the read. I read a couple of his. There was another one, The Lonesome Gods, that was pretty good. Riley's Luck. Some of them are short stories, some of them are full-length novels, and you'll get a feel for his style and the similar themes that he delves into as he goes, but if you're only going to read two of them, read his autobiography and read Last of the Breed. And let me know what you think. And if you've got an opinion on somebody else who might be the great American novelist, by all means, let's duke it out. Email is dreadpennies@gmail.com. I might eventually get an at dreadpennies domain, but right now we're keeping things pretty simple, pretty analog. And on that note, I obviously need some sleep, so I'm going to call it a night. This episode has run a little long, but whatever. Speaking off the cuff, talking about things that I like. That's just how it's going to go. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this. Tune in next week for more literary recommendations. In the meantime, drive safe, and I will see you out there.